Second reading today. We are children of the light, not of the darkness. Jesus' coming should not catch us off guard. Be prepared. Don't be afraid. Be prepared. Big difference. First reading today, as I said in the introduction, is one of the options for a wedding. And it's funny, every time it's used, and it's being proclaimed, I always look at the bride. The bride is just sitting there like this, the kneeler, just listening, smiling happily. But it's true. Man who finds a worthy wife is blessed indeed. We see in there a very specific line. It says that the groom entrusts his heart to her. Right at the beginning, right at the front. And then it speaks about all of the actions of the bride. Now, she doesn't do these actions separate from him entrusting his heart to her. She doesn't do these actions so that he will entrust his heart to her. The entrustment has already taken place. In entrusting his heart to her, then there is this fruitful response on the part of the bride. For being loved, she is set free. And we see this beautiful explosion of fruitfulness in her life. Because she is loved, there is freedom. When we turn to the gospel text today, it's kind of a tough downshift, because we're talking about love and brides and bridegrooms and fruitful response, and then we go to talking about money. It's like, all right, we're going to talk about money now. But it's not so different. The master entrusts his wealth to his servants. That same understanding of entrustment, won the heart, won his treasure. He entrusts it to them, and he wants to see the actions of them because of this entrustment. We see the two of them in receiving this entrustment, this act of affirmation of who you are, here is a gift for you. Notice that it is a gift. Because does the master ever ask for it back? No. In fact, this is proved at the end where the lazy servant, which we'll get to later, his talent is now given to the one with 10. He still has the 10. He has the 5 he got. He has the 5 that he was able to earn through trading. And now he has one more. The master never has asked for them back. The master has entrusted his treasure to them. He wants to know, what did you do with my entrustment to you? The first two, they traded with it. So, you know, spices come in from this place. You buy them at this price. You sell them to this one, go in that direction. You make a little money. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then trade it. They made 100% return. Pretty darn good. We see that the master, he's smart. He's not willy-nilly with his treasure. He entrusts to each one according to their ability. Again, if we're talking about love and the entrustment of God and his love to us, it is not that he loves one more than another. He entrusts his love to us in accordance with our capacity to receive it. You got one of them old school coffee cups that legitimately holds one cup of coffee? And then you got like a modern coffee cup, which is like 3 cups of coffee. But don't tell anybody, because you're like, well, I only have one cup of coffee every morning. It's like, yeah. And then you go to those coffee shops where, like, the cappuccino cup is this big, you know? And you're, like, drinking it with both hands. If you fill all of them up with coffee, they are all full. Does one have the capacity to look at the other and say, oh, you're more full than I am? The barista must love you more. No. They're all filled. Filled to their capacity. And the master knows the capacities of his servants and so imparts to them according to their ability. Now, let's not confuse the word talents with the English word talents in the sense of like, hey, he gives them a talent or, a, you know, like an ability. No, talent, it's a unit of money. It's usually a rod that has gold rings or silver rings, number of rings stacked to so much, and that's a talent of silver or a talent of gold. It's money that he entrusts to them. They received the gift. They received the gift, and therefore then their actions flowed from the gift. So the third one, this is the one with the problem, isn't it? It says right away when he received the gift, out of fear, he went and buried it. What is the fear? Fear that I will lose it? Fear that I will screw it up somehow? Fear that I'm not really worthy of this gift? I'm sure that the other ones, in some sense, were having those same temptations. But when the gift was given and received, they overcame them. They overcame the fear, knowing that the gift was given to them. It was now theirs. Theirs to use, theirs to lose. It was theirs. And so they had the courage to do this. Notice when the third one comes to show the master what he did with his gift. He offers the talent back. Here is the talent that you gave to me. Here is it back. He's the only one that gives it back. Or attempts to, because he is the only one that never received it. This is the key, my brothers and sisters. He never received it. We see it at the end, and I've got to use the book because it's kind of tricky how Jesus says it, right? He's not trying to be, when Jesus speaks, he's never trying to be cryptic in that sense. He's being very accurate. Listen, from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. Wait a minute. You just said he had not. How can he have not and yet have something taken away? Well, that's because he had it, but he never received it. He never really made it his own. He held it. But it was never his own. He had not. And so we have this question, my brothers and sisters. We bring the first reading together with the gospel text, and we understand that when Jesus is speaking about a master and servants, he's actually talking about God and us. And he's not really talking about talents, but he does give to us stewardship of material things. First and foremost, God gives to us his heart. Jesus, the bridegroom, in love with his bride, the church, gives to her his heart. He entrusts himself to her. Has the church received this gift of love? Like literally received it, embraced it, made it her own. Has the church, in response to being loved, to having her bridegroom entrust his heart to her, has the church then sprung forth in an incredible fruitfulness of action, springing forth from being loved, not doing things in order to be loved, But has the church, in receiving that gift of love, embracing it, knowing that when it is given, it will never be taken back? That the church, if the giving of one person, a human being, of the giving of their heart to another person can set them free, how much more so Jesus Christ giving his heart to the church? How much more so is the church set free by this gift? And so when I ask you the question, has the church received the love of Jesus Christ? Has she embraced it? Has she identified with it? Has she allowed the love to become so a part of who she is that she is liberated and set free to go and to be and to do? And you might say, well, yes, Father. Theologically, yes, the church has received this gift of love. And she is set free to go into the world and to act and to be generous and to be loving and compassionate to all of those in need. Yes, the church, in her ideal, has received that. But have you received it, my brothers and sisters? But when I speak about the church, I do not speak about an ideal. I don't speak about the stones in the walls of this church building. They are incapable of receiving the love of God. The only stones in this church that are capable of receiving the love of God are you, living stones. Have you received the love of Jesus? Or like the third servant, have you in fear taken this gift and buried it out of fear that you will lose it, out of fear that you are not worthy of it, out of fear somehow that you're going to screw it up and he's going to want it back at the end? My brothers and sisters, this is not how marriage works. This is why the church can speak about marriage, okay? Because it is essential to understanding the relationship of God to his bride, the church. Jesus has entrusted his heart to his bride. He will not take it back. We are free in receiving this gift, to be formed by this gift. That our actions would flow from this gift. That we would have an identity through that gift. A new creation. Beloved and known. Where does this take place, my brothers and sisters? Well, it takes place in the sacraments and baptism and confirmation. But it is renewed every day here at the altar of God. Every day, this gift of love by Jesus, this renewal of himself to his bride, the church. How do I know this? Well, science. Yes, Catholics do science. My brothers and sisters, do you realize that in the history of the church, the 2,000 years of the church, there have been Eucharistic miracles? Okay, so we've celebrated a Eucharistic miracle, right? Every time we come to the altar, bread and wine is transformed into the body and blood, soul and divinity of Jesus Christ. St. Thomas Aquinas tells us it's more of a miracle because of the radical transformation that they in that these elements go through. It's more of a miracle that we still look at them and see them and taste them as bread and wine. Because they're so radically transformed, it's more of a miracle that they still look like bread and wine than it is than what they have become in Jesus. Eucharistic miracles is when we actually behold flesh or blood. Now, this isn't in the scripture, but this is 2,000 years of the church. There are Eucharistic miracles. And every time that that sample of that tissue, that human flesh, is taken and analyzed by science, by a laboratory, it comes back every time the same. It is always the inner lining of the human heart. You realize that? Every time there is a Eucharistic miracle, every time the veil is pulled back so that we can actually see and it is tested, it is always the heart that is given. The heart of Jesus Christ is given to his bride, to the church, every day. Now, my brothers and sisters, we might say of God, I want to be a steward of your grace. I want this and I want that, because I know that you have all of these riches and that you're going to pour them into the world and you want to bless your church. But I'm telling you, if we as the church do not first start with the first gift of love, if we are not faithful in receiving that first gift of love and being good stewards of that first gift, then what else is God going to entrust to us? Now, it's interesting to me, because if I said to you, God loves you and he entrusts his heart to you, he wants you to receive this gift of love, you're like, wow, that's amazing. It's like, yes, it is amazing. But what the scriptures reveal to us is that it's only the beginning. That if we are actually good stewards and receive that gift of love, and we allow it to be active in our life and to transform us, that it become a part of who we are, then he will look upon his bride, the church, and say, good job. Well done. But I got something so much greater for you. I want you to come and share in my joy. What we receive now from Jesus, as awesome and as miraculous as it is only the beginning. But if we dismiss the beginning, if we dismiss ourselves as unworthy to receive it, if we don't receive the gift he wants to give us now, we will not be ready to receive the other gifts that he wants to pour upon us. We will, if we don't steward this gift well, of love, he will not impart to us greater gifts. So, my brothers and sisters, have you received the love of Jesus? Have you received it to yourself? Have you allowed yourself to be beloved, to be the one who is loved? Have you allowed yourself, as the bridegroom and the bride, to receive this gift of his heart poured out for you, to receive that love, to be changed by it, to become a new creation by it, and then to act in accordance with it? Because if we have not yet done that, now is the time. If we haven't yet done it, my brothers and sisters, now is the time. It's not too late. Receive the gift. Be changed by the gift. Be good stewards of the gift of his love, which he wants to pour into your life.